Israeli soldiers buried Palestinian children alive. In mass graves, they buried Palestinian children alive. There are reports of Palestinian children with their hands tied, restrained behind their backs, being forced into mass graves by the bulldozers that dug those graves. There are eyewitness reports saying that the muffled screams of these children could be heard while these bulldozers poured dirt over their bodies to suffocate them, to literally bury them alive. Dr. Mark Perlmutter, an American surgeon volunteering in Gaza, received multiple eyewitness reports from Palestinians that bulldozers were being used to bury children alive in mass graves, and he intends to submit these testimonies to the International Court of Justice. There is also a UN report from 2024 that noted that the bodies of children were found in multiple mass graves, some showing signs of torture, others showing possible indication of being buried alive. That includes locations like Nasser Hospital, El Shifa Hospital, where mass graves were found containing the bodies of hundreds of Palestinians following Israeli withdrawal. And among the bodies in those graves were women and children, many women and children. And these bodies were found tied, with their hands bound, completely stripped.
We have seen the most deranged behavior from Israelis. And I'm not just even talking soldiers. We've seen deranged behavior from soldiers, but we've seen deranged mothers on TikTok dressing up their children, you know, with black eyes and missing teeth, or making fun of parents losing babies. We've seen soldiers urinating on Palestinian captives, children attacked by dogs, sexual assault, rape. At a certain point, for those of us who are looking at Israeli society, this is looking psychotic.
Hey,
yeah, folks, what can I say? Israel is an absolute pariah, and it is just on a mission at the moment. As I said on the last video, the Israeli generals are saying they haven't killed like this since 1967. They're just going hard, slaughtering villages in Gaza and West Bank, slaughtering entire villages in Lebanon, going into villages in Lebanon and basically telling the people they've got 2 hours to leave and basically just giving them a few minutes.
Her estimation is over 100 soldiers in total kind of flood into the village and immediately tell people, you leave right now or you die. My main source, Nasreen Abdelal, she's at her family's little corner store behind the counter, and she sees a large armored bulldozer coming down the road towards her, and behind it, a large number of Israeli military vehicles. They went door to door, pointed their guns at residents. They told them, you have 2 hours, but they didn't even give them that. People didn't even have time, some of them, to lock their doors behind them. Nasreen had run into her house to try to at least get her family's passports and a couple belongings. And she had put her kids in the pickup truck and went back to the house to get stuff. And she just hears the pickup truck's horn honking. She runs outside. There's an Israeli soldier who's basically opened the door of her vehicle while her kids are in it and is honking the horn and tells her, you get in the car, you drive right now. You drive away right now or we shoot you. And so that is how the village of Ain Arab was basically ethnically cleansed. It does seem to be a rarity, this level of kind of door-to-door at gunpoint ethnic cleansing. However, you know, I do see it as emblematic of kind of what Israel is doing in the south, right? We're talking about dozens and dozens of villages that have been, you know, swallowed into this quote unquote yellow line that Israel declared on April 19th, saying no one will be allowed to, you know, re-enter these villages. There's an estimated 60 villages that have been completely destroyed south of this yellow line. And now obviously they are moving further north and exacting widespread destruction on the city of Sur, which I wrote about for my last story for Dropsite, as well as now in the story today, we talk about the city of Nabatieh, which is experiencing very heavy airstrikes. And so casualties mounting, even as, of course, all the diplomatic parties attempt to reach some sort of a ceasefire in southern Lebanon. People have told me that this is the worst that they've experienced. I think just the extent of the destruction, also the speed by which it's happening. Even this yellow line and these designations, they're completely arbitrary. They're changing rapidly. There isn't any sort of discernible calculus here besides mass destruction and mass instability, really, and mass punishment of a people.
Yeah, and clearing out entire villages in Lebanon this way and then just detonating the entire village. These aren't military targets. These are Lebanese homes. They're just going in and they are decimating all of southern Lebanon. Some of these villages are 3,000 years old. They don't care. They're just going in and destroying everything. Displaced over 1 million people. Bombing tent cities in Gaza. Not letting any food in, not letting any trucks in, not letting any amenities in at all. There is garbage piled up in Gaza now, full of rats, full of insects, and the most terrible living conditions imaginable.
We are in the center of Gaza City. We are on top of a pile of waste that has been accumulated throughout the world. This situation has been affecting all the people living in Gaza City, especially those living in this neighborhood who have been at risk of health concern, especially during the summer period.
القرص على وجوهنا خزقنا الخيم خزقنا الأرض فحات الأرض كلهن يعني الوضع صعب للغاية نحن نسكن على مكب النفايات القرص الفيران الرائحة الكريهة البعوضة الأمراض المتفشية
يعني إحنا اليوم لا قادرين نخزن أكل الأواعي تاكلن والخيم تاكلن
ليل نهار بنحاول إنه نسد بالواح زناقي نسد المناطق اللي بدخلن علينا منهن القرص لكن في الأول وفي الآخر هذا مكب نفايات
وحطيت سم وواحد بيقدرش يكافح لحاله يعني أنت اليوم السنطي تبع السم بثلاث شيكل لما بتجيب لك أنت بخمسين شيكل بتقتل لك خمسة عشر عرس طب ما بيجي بدالهم خمسين وإحنا بدنا حد يقف معانا يساعدنا في هيك أمر يجيب لنا سم يجيب لنا مصايد يعمل لنا حل لهيك شغلة
And this is all being done deliberately because this is how Israelis like to torture their victims. It's now been revealed, there's been a study that has shown that rape and torture is part of Israeli government doctrine. For decades, scattered reports have emerged of pedophiles hiding in Israel, of rape within the military, of Orthodox sects protecting abusers, of Palestinian children subjected to systematic sexual violence. Each case was dismissed as an aberration,
But when you connect the evidence, a darker picture emerges. Israel has built a civilization-scale apparatus where child rape is not just a failure of government, it is a doctrine of government cohesion and control. Israel's law of return, intended to offer refuge status to Jews worldwide, has been systematically exploited as a haven for child rapists. Jewish American pedophiles routinely flee to Israel to escape prosecution. Extradition requests often stall for years. Inside Israel, abuse is pervasive. Tens of thousands of pedophiles operate in the country every year. Hundreds of children are sexually assaulted annually. Orthodox communities conceal molestation within yeshivas. Rabbinical courts silence survivors. The military suppresses reports of rape among female conscripts. Predators fleeing from the United States and Europe don't just disappear. They bring with them archives of crimes and compromat, which become assets for Israeli intelligence. Sanctuary is a pipeline for importing leverage. This feeds directly into Israel's intelligence doctrine. The Epstein-Maxwell network, with its ties to Israeli intelligence, exemplifies the model. Children as currency, sex as leverage, silence as control. Honey traps involving minors ensnare foreign politicians. Mossad archives compromise US officials and UN staff. Diplomatic immunity shields predators abroad. In the occupied territories, Palestinian children are subject to detention, rape, and sexual humiliation. These are not random war crimes. They are systemic. Minors are coerced into collaboration under threat of rape. For Israel, occupation doubles as an inexhaustible reservoir of child victims. The machine operates in plain sight because global institutions act as mirrors, not protectors. Media reports surface, then vanish. The UN blocks reports of Israel's sexual war crimes. Western governments continue aid while silencing survivors. The evidence converges. Israel has constructed an apparatus of governance where child rape is a functional doctrine. Internally, it maintains cohesion through silence and ritual. Externally, it weaponizes compromat to control diaspora elites and foreign governments. Militarily, it deploys sexual violence as both weapon and archive. Globally, it is shielded by narrative immunities that turn exposure into taboo. This is not governance failing to stop child rape. This is governance through child rape. Why does the United States call Israel its greatest ally? Because the apparatus ensures silence at the highest levels. Compromised officials cannot resist. Aid continues to flow. Wars are subsidized. And at the center, children's bodies remain the raw currency of power.
This is simply the way they do business. This is a torture state. That's what Israel is. I mean, Judaism itself is a death cult. Their star on their flag is the Star of Remphan, which symbolizes child sacrifice. There is no such thing as the Star of David. If you're a religious person out there, a Christian, a Jew, anybody, find me a Star of David mentioned in any religious book anywhere. You can't. Maybe it's mentioned somewhere in the Scofield Bible. I don't know. That wouldn't surprise me. But if it is, that would be the only one, because of course that is a complete book of bullshit. More than any of them are books of bullshit, that one is the most book of bullshit ever. But there is no Star of David, it's the Star of Remphan. This is a group of psychopaths that are taking over the world, and they don't really care who knows it. They consider themselves powerful enough now. See, they've got this way through Donald Trump. Remember when Donald Trump was first inaugurated, Benjamin Netanyahu said in a speech, "We are now in possession of the superpower." They got dirt on Trump. They got dirt on everybody through the Epstein files. That's how they're able to get away with this. This whole merging of the military, merging the United States and Israeli militaries together. This is basically just handing the United States over to Israel. It's more than it already is. I mean, it has been anyway. Now they're just doing it out in the open, so you can see they're just kind of finalizing the deal. This has been a coup from within. The United States is gone. Israel is guilty of so many war crimes, and now the United States is going to be just as guilty with this merger. This is another reason why you will never get the United States pushing for any Israelis to be charged with war crimes, especially now the two militaries are being merged together, because that will put these war crimes charges against the United States as well, because it's the United States that supplied all the bombs and weapons for all of this genocide to continue. And they are genociding Lebanon now the way they have genocided Gaza. And they intend to continue this. They intend to take over Jordan and Syria. They intend to go to war with Turkey and with Egypt as well after this. They intend to annex large sections of Egypt. They intend to annex large sections of Saudi Arabia, all of Jordan, I think all of Syria, parts of Iraq, parts of southern Turkey. That is the plan for Greater Israel. I did hope a few weeks ago or a month ago that there would be no Greater Israel, that actually prodded the lion's den by attacking Iran the way they did, but it now appears that Iran is simply responding the way Israel wants them to respond, and they're just basically destroying the supply chain. They're not really destroying Israel at all. So this whole thing has just been a play to give Israel more power. And Israel set up footholds in Argentina. You've got Javier Milei allowing 400,000 Israelis in there to settle. And you've got like at least that many settling in Ukraine as well. You've got whole enclaves of these people up at places like Kiryas Yoel in northern New York State and in Lakewood, New Jersey. Whole enclaves of hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these people. And yet we're told there's only 15 million Jews on Earth. It's ridiculous, folks. The figures don't add up at all. You know, when you look at the Earth, there doesn't appear to be 8 billion people on Earth. There's probably only about 3. And there is definitely far, far more than 15 million Jews on Earth. They're setting up shop everywhere, buying 40 Greek islands. They're actually being chased out of some of these Greek islands now. The Greeks are getting a little bit annoyed about what they're doing. Israel seems to be taking over everywhere, taking over all the forests of Patagonia, taking over large sections of Argentina apart from Patagonia, taking over large sections of Ukraine, large sections of Greece. And now the whole island deal. The whole island deal. I mean, what a scam. The whole Trump family, what a scam the Trump family has been. Like, it's just taken over so much stock. It's made like $4 billion. Like, Trump himself has made like $4 billion in insider trading just in the last year. Set his son up on a $620 million company. Now he's got his son-in-law and his daughter wanting to buy this island in Albania, and saying, oh, it was just so warm and fuzzy. We went there and we swam there off the boat, and I was walking on the shore barefoot, and I just felt just this was the fulfillment of my dreams, you know, just so warm and fuzzy about it.
I'm working on an incredible project with my husband in the Mediterranean. It's massive in scale.
I think that's an understatement. Can you explain?
Yes, it is.
There's no power on this island. You're building everything from scratch.
Well, it's an unbelievable, beautiful 1,400-hectare private island in the middle of the Mediterranean for me, despite the scale of it. We not only the island, but we have 5 miles of beachfront directly across from the island, this beautiful peninsula with a lagoon on one side, the ocean on the other, beautiful white sand beaches. For me, it feels more like a challenge than anything else. The culmination of all of my experience in real estate, all of my travel, a lot of reflection on how I want to live, how I think people increasingly are wanting to live, and trying to really build something that's a tangible manifestation of that.
And to say this is just a random island, we thought we'd, you know, be a good place to set up a resort. No, this is a strategic military choke point that is always grabbed in any major military conflict, because this is the choke point between Albania and Italy, and anybody who controls that island controls those straits that go between Albania and Italy. And this island is fully set up. This island has bunkers, at least like 30 bunkers. It has an underground tunnel system. It has submarine bases. It has buildings. This is a full militarized island already. If the elite, someone like Trump's family, was to get hold of this island, this would be like Epstein Island meets Batman and becomes Spectre on steroids, you know, like full Hail Hydra shit.
Kushner is not buying that island in Albania to turn it into a luxury resort. The story that they've put out is that this is a luxury resort project backed by the Saudis and facilitated by the Albanian government. So this is the island here. Look what even Google Maps has labeled this as, firstly. But let's zoom out a bit. That island is here, right there. It is at the exact point where the Adriatic Sea becomes the Ionian Sea, approximately 56 miles from Italy. A single most important geographic fact to understand is that whoever controls this island, Strazan, controls the Strait of Otranado. This narrow choke point between Albania and Italy is the only maritime gateway between the Adriatic and the Mediterranean. Historically, every single navy that has ever wanted to dominate this area or control trade through it has had to occupy and fortify Strazan. This means a lot of the work is already done for them. There are 3,600 nuclear survivable bunkers on this island. There's also 10 miles of underground tunnels connecting command posts, ammunition stores, submarine pens and hideouts. There are Soviet submarine pens and deep water anchorages already there, ready for use. All of this militarizing of the island, preparation for nuclear war, was done during the Hoxha regime. I will do a separate video about the Hoxha regime in Albania. But here's the full chain of control. It passed from the Ottomans to the Italians to the Albanians to the Soviet Navy back to the Albanians, and now suddenly it's going to a private American cartel. The through line here is that it has been a military garrison for the local Navy. The exception at the end is that it's now being sold to Jared Kushner. Why is Europe allowing the Project 2025 guys to buy their own nuclear garrison in the middle of the Adriatic Sea? Well, we're not, because this was Albania yesterday. Shout out to anybody that was there, you absolute legends. It's not technically correct to say that it's Kushner and Ivana that are buying this island either. This is the Delaware Corporate Registry. This is the entity Atlantic Incubation Partners LLC. This is who's buying the island. That LLC is linked to Kushner's company, Affinity Partners. And the CEO of Affinity Partners, Asher Abashira, is also listed as the chairman of Strazan Real Estate Development Company LLC. The legal home of Atlantic Incubation Partners is Delaware. It was formed on the 5th of April, 2023, EN92332970. Kushner is the public face of this, but I'd like to introduce you to the rest of the Affinity Partners team. You'll get it here. Chad Mizell is Senior Legal Counsel for Affinity Partners. He served as Chief of Staff to the United States Justice Department in 2025. That's an immediate conflict of interest, and we're only at the first name. Nick Butterfield was the former Deputy White House Policy Coordinator from August 2019 to January 2021 under Donald Trump. Also, before that, he interned during George W. Bush's administration. When you search for Lauren Key, the first thing that comes up is the letter that the US Finance Committee had to send her in this CFO role a year ago, saying specifically, "I write seeking information relating to the recent revelation that 99% of the investment funds that you are managing is coming from the Saudi Arabian government." This is Chairman Wyden's letter to her, where he literally opens it saying, "It is deeply concerning that several Middle Eastern governments are using funds managed by Affinity as a means to pay millions of dollars in fees to the president's son." When I search for the name John Rader, the first thing that comes up is his bio at the Hoover Institution that confirms he is also senior counselor at Palantir and was chief of staff to the US Senator Bill Hagerty. He also spent 4 years in the White House. The next slide is what they call their global research and geoeconomics team. The first one, Major General Miguel Correa, is a retired Green Beret two-star US Army General. He was the defense attaché, which is the highest ranking member of the armed forces stationed in an overseas embassy. He was in Dubai. There, he coordinated a secret 2017 US Special Forces rescue of a downed Emirati helicopter in Yemen. He saved a wounded Emirati royal and became the personal hero to the Crown Prince. He is credited with coining the name Abraham Accords. Charming. The next one is Kevin Hassett, head of global research. Another screaming conflict of interest. Hello? Is the US democracy just for decoration? He is currently the director of the White House National Economic Council, the most senior economic policy job in the building. He is also a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, a teacher at the Columbia Business School, and has research affiliation with NBER. So the man who is currently the architect of US economic policy is also the head of research at a fund that is 99% financed by Middle East countries. That is a live conflict of interest, an unresolved one that demands a disclosure check, but it's not my country, so somebody should put some pressure on. And then this one, Cale Klingenpiel, is the former chief economist at the America First Policy Institute. You know, the Trump-aligned policy shop? Now, they're partners. Asad Nayavi is also a partner at Apis Partners, a private equity fund, and Wolfensohn Fund Management, another private equity fund that was founded by the previous World Bank president James Wolfensohn. He's also ex-Lazard. It's weird how I read those positions as crimes, but he would probably hear them as a flattering compliment. But anyway, the pattern across his CV is the same machine, extracting fees from the poorest people on earth and dressing that up as inclusion. It's similar with the second one. Brett Perlman is also PE investment banking. I'd love these men to know that if I was sitting looking pretty in a bar with my girlfriends and they tried to send us drinks, I would spit in it and walk out. He was Blackstone's first ever undergraduate hire in 1989, rising to senior managing director. He then went on to co-found Elevation Partners, another private equity firm, a Silicon Valley one. Avi Berkowitz, also in the White House under the Trump administration. He worked on Trump's peace plan, the Gaza peace plan, and on the Abraham Accords. He was actually the lead White House negotiator on the Abraham Accords, the deal that normalized Israel's relations with the UAE. And then Tom Storch, according to the Atlantic Council, is a distinguished fellow in the project for the Middle East integration. Also the deputy director of the National Economic Council, the deputy assistant to the president for the International Economic Affairs, the US lead negotiator at the G20 and the G7 coordination during the US host year 2020. Senior Director for Global Economics at NSC and a Senior International Affairs Official at the Department of Energy.
Yeah, this isn't just some random island, folks, that we walked on and felt all warm and fuzzy about. No, no, this is a strategic operation. And the people in Albania are absolutely outraged about it. And there are mass protests in the street in Albania. Yeah, pretty full-on stuff. The president says he doesn't care. He says you can have 5,000 people protest, you can have 500,000 people protest, I'm still going to go ahead and do it. Because, of course, he's there, he's put his hand on the wall, and he's all part of the club. But, you know, there's only 2.7 million people, I think, in all of Albania. And if that's the attitude of the president or the prime minister, then I think his days are probably numbered and we're going to see this guy either dead or chased out of the country within a very short time. That seems to be what's happening in Albania. It's just crazy, folks, what Israel is doing. And this whole merger of the US military, it's just, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen. This is really, really bad. You know, you've got to wonder, what's it going to take for the United States military to stand up and reclaim their country? What's it going to take for the people to stand up and reclaim their country? You know, and while all this is going on, all this death and destruction and all this stuff that Israel's doing, you got Trump building a big UFC fighting arena at the front on the White House lawn. You got him wanting to build the ballroom, and there was a whole discussion about the ballroom and all this sort of shit he wants to do, put his face on a $250 note and all sorts of crap, all this stuff that he wants to do. All this is going on while all this death and destruction and mayhem is being carried out by Israel. And no one's doing anything about it. And the Palestinians are suffering. The Lebanese are suffering. Everybody is suffering. Even the people of the United States are suffering. And Trump's building a ballroom and a UFC arena on the White House lawn. And there's talk about it. Nobody likes it. But hey, it's still going ahead anyway. The whole world's just gone crazy. And the data centers, these are still going ahead. All their claims about climate change and shit. You notice how they've all sort of disappeared? These data centers are going to be using massive amounts of water, making massive amounts of noise, using massive amounts of electricity. What happened to all the claims about climate change and shit? But again, the data centers are happening because we use all the data. So stop using all the data. Stop giving them all the data they need. Stop using all this smart shit, folks. And realize what's going on here. And how you've been controlled in so many ways. Like, we know what they did with the graphene and the COVID and the injections and the nanotech and 5G and all the stuff we've talked about over the years. All the Wi-Fi as well, all the stuff from the data centers that's going into the data centers. See, all this Wi-Fi information, like I said, anything you do that's Wi-Fi in your house. You've got a smart fridge, you've got smart toasters, smart ovens. They're all using Wi-Fi. They're all setting up data and sending data to these data centers. What they're also doing is mapping your house. That's something that Wi-Fi does, is map your house. If you have three cell phones in your house, and generally most families will have three cell phones in their house, you got three cell phones and you got a router, maybe a couple of routers in your house, a few different computer nodes in your house. You've essentially set up a sonar in your house. It's like that scene in Batman when he was trying to find the Joker and he turned everybody's cell phones in Gotham City into nodes so that he could map everything and see everything that was going on in every house.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Beautiful, unethical, dangerous. You've turned every cell phone in Gotham into a microphone.
And a high-frequency generator receiver.
You took my sonar concept and applied it to every phone in the city. With half the city feeding you sonar, you can image all of Gotham.
If he talks within range of any phone in the city, you can triangulate his position.
See, they show you what they're doing in these movies. And that's what they've done with Wi-Fi. That's what Wi-Fi can do. See, it's already set up. And they use it. They know what you're doing. They know what room you're in. They know how many people are in there. They know when you're showering. They know when they can set up a 3D model. They can see a 3D model.
Well, this is absolutely terrifying. They're able to actually spy on us using Wi-Fi. I mean, forget videos, forget surveillance, forget microphones, all of the things we think about when it comes to surveilling people. They're now actually able to compose video imagery and figure out who's in a room, what you're doing, all just using Wi-Fi signals, which we're all surrounded with right now. Here is Cyber Maddie, and she explains this on her YouTube channel. We sped it up, but watch this.
Wi-Fi, as we know it, is on the verge to becoming a sensing technology capable of understanding movement, presence, and gestures without cameras. So what does this mean for surveillance and for your privacy? Wi-Fi sensing has been around for longer than you may think. In the early 2000s, researchers figured out that Wi-Fi signals moved and changed as people moved through a space. And by 2013, a researcher figured out that you could detect human breathing through a wall using nothing but a Wi-Fi router. And now the IE, or some may call it the IEEE, or some may call it the IEEE, has standardized this. And it is called 802.11bf, which is a Wi-Fi sensing capabilities being integrated within all routers. So this turns existing Wi-Fi into a person sensing tool without using cameras or wearables or anything like that, just using Wi-Fi and then the waves that it emits. So I wanted to see for myself how much Wi-Fi could actually see. I grabbed a cheap ESP32 board and flashed some open source firmware onto it and pointed it at myself to see if Wi-Fi could detect my presence and other people's presence in a room. So when I got everything hooked up, it did sense my presence. It saw my heart rate, my breathing rhythm, it did my pose detection, and it detected multiple people walking around within the space. Now, for this experiment, I only had one ESP32 board, which it does recommend at least two. So the sensing is a little janky compared to if you had two or multiple ESP32 boards, but with only one ESP32, it does get the job done. When it was detecting two people walking around, as you can see, the bigger blob of light was me, and I think with the one sensor, it had trouble positioning me in the space within the software. As you can see by the ghost person moving around me rapidly, it did get the job done, and it did sense two people. So how does Wi-Fi sensing actually work? Think of your Wi-Fi like a sonar. So for example, bats use sonar to figure out where they are within a space. They send out sound waves and it bounces off objects and then comes back to them. Wi-Fi does the same thing, but with radio waves. Every time a Wi-Fi signal bounces off your body, it comes back as something different. So the data actually transforms as it bounces off objects. And those tiny differences have data that encode your heartbeat, breathing rate, your presence, your pose. So this is technically called CSI sensing. So why would Wi-Fi sensing even need to be implemented in the first place? Now, Wi-Fi sensing works anywhere where Wi-Fi exists, which is pretty much everywhere all the time. You don't need any extra hardware or any extra setup. You just need Wi-Fi to be able to sense people and where they are. Now, the interesting part, because there are no cameras, it actually avoids those pesky privacy regulations. One thing this country needs is more technology to avoid privacy regulations more than we're already doing. Now, some reasons that the developers give that this Wi-Fi sensing might be useful to organizations or to you personally. These are somewhat normal use cases such as elderly care, hospital, patient monitoring, like that. Like, yeah, I could see this being used for those use cases and that's somewhat valid. Now, the more so concerning use cases is in the hotel in hospitality section. Room occupancy without door sensors, mini bar in bathroom usage patterns, energy savings on empty rooms. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want someone seeing an infrared outline of me and my bathroom usage or my hotel room occupancy. But
no kidding. So this is all extremely scary. You can watch that full thing, Cyber Maddie. Very, very frightening that now Wi-Fi could just be used to spy on us. They don't even need video cameras anymore. They can just use Wi-Fi and see an outline of you and what you're doing in your hotel room, using the bathroom, using your bed, doing whatever it is you do in your bed and in your bathroom. And they could see all of that. They could see people coming and going from your house. They could see what you're doing, where you are in your house. I mean, just imagine all of the things they could do. And because the laws have not caught up to this, it could be done. It's spying without spying.
You set all that up as wireframe. and put, you know, skin on it and clad it, then it looks like people. It looks like you. So they've all got this stuff going on, and this is what's going in the data centers as well. All of your Wi-Fi setups in all your houses are all mapping your houses in 3D in real time. Yeah, so the Wi-Fi is acting like a sonar with everybody all over the world. It's crazy. It's crazy just how much shit they're doing, folks, and how much hold they've already got on everything and everybody. It really is. And it's crazy to see just how hated Israel is around the world. I mean, the propaganda of trying to stop people speaking out against Israel is phenomenal. But people are still continuing to do it. And so they should. It's amazing. Like, I think there's like a 60 country coalition that is talking about the need to actually kick Israel out of the United Nations and actually create some sort of perhaps military force to stop it doing what it's doing in Gaza and Lebanon. And again, this will go to Syria and it will go everywhere because this is what Israel is doing. It's what it wants to do. And it's really interesting. I mean, you could get pretty well every country on earth. You could put together an international coalition and you could call on people from every country on earth at the moment to go and fight a war against Israel. And you wouldn't even have to draft them. They'd all just volunteer. Hey, Nacho, did you come to see me again? They'd all just volunteer. Everybody would just jump in line to go and kick some Israeli butt at the moment. It's amazing. Absolutely incredible. But people aren't seeing what the answer is. I mean, a lot of the stuff you're seeing, people are saying, yeah, fuck all these Jews. We need to kick them out, send them back to Israel. And that's exactly what they want you to do, is to send them all to Israel, because they need them all to populate greater Israel, because they want to take over Lebanon. They want to take over Jordan. They want to take over Syria. They want to take over the Sinai. They want to take over the top of Saudi Arabia. They want to take over eastern Egypt. They want to take over western Iraq.
I address Prime Minister Netanyahu. You are the head. Indeed, you are the head. And it's up to you to change a terrible route that just started. You can stop it today. Not because they don't give the names, because it is a lie. It's a danger. It leads to a horrible Saudi Arabia peace plan. No, no, no. We say no to all this distorted route. We want Am Israel in Eretz Israel, in the great Eretz Israel, and never submit to terror, and never, 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 never give any part of the living body of Eretz Israel to anybody. Not to leave, as Ramban said, not to leave Eretz Israel to enemies, and not to leave it desolate. We will settle Gaza. We will settle Lebanon. We will settle the entire promised land. Thank you very much.
And they need the numbers to populate these areas. So they want you to hate all the Jews in your country and send them home to Israel. Thing is, Israel isn't their home. The country is Palestine, and we don't need more Jews going there. What needs to happen is Israel needs to be sanctioned completely, and all of the Jews need to be moved out back to wherever they migrated from and deal with it that way. I'm not quite sure how. Hasta mañana. I'm not quite sure how. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I don't want to say just kill them all, although it sometimes does seem like a good idea. But we don't want to chase them out of the countries that they're in and tell them to go to Israel, because we don't want them in Israel. We don't want them any more of them in Israel. We don't want any of them in Israel. They should never have gone there to begin with. That's the problem. So, yeah. A lot of people forget that. But what we've got to see is the brutality. I mean, this is something that I've been saying for the last 3 years, even for the last 10 years. I mean, ever since I really went to Gaza in 2012, I've been talking about this. So I spent a long time after I went to Gaza in 2012 where I focused on nothing but Gaza for probably 3 or 4 years. Like, I really kept a lot of focus on it because it was important. Then I realized that we're not going to heal Gaza by screaming about Gaza and screaming about Israel. We've got to understand that the state of Israel is a welfare state. It's being funded by our politicians. And so we need to deal with that. We need to deal with it on the ground in our own countries. That's what I've been saying for a long time. And I've said that if we don't, see, the problem is that our politicians are allowing this. They're funding this and they're allowing it. And if we don't see that, that if our politicians are going to fund and allow this to happen to the people of Palestine through their support for the state of Israel, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. Because if they're going to do that to these people, then what do you expect they have in store for us? I've said this for a long time, and I think we're seeing this now. But the notion still applies. That's the thing. We're still in exactly the same position. It's just that Israel is now just in a state of bloodlust. They're just going forward as much as they want. I mean, it's been established that they've got a policy of rape. They've got a policy of torture in all of their jails. The treatment that they give the prisoners in their jails, making sure they got cable ties all the time. But they're cable tied with their hands behind their back and they're bent over double to walk between cells. And when they're in those cells, they're made to sit in stress positions. They can't just lie down or sit around in the cell. They're made to sit on their knees with their hands tied behind their backs, with their foreheads on the ground and their bums in the air. Well, they're not allowed to relax or anything. They've got to have be in that position where they've got their forehead on the ground, their hands behind their back and their bums in the air, so they can do pretty much anything. They won't have them raped by dogs or whatever. That's what they do to them. And they keep them in those positions sometimes for 60 days straight. You try holding that position for a minute or two. It's very stressful. They keep them like that all day. And then they keep them like that for 60 days straight. When they lead them out of that position, they bend them over double to move them between cells. They torture these people all the time. The man who was raped to death in SDE Tiananmen jail turned out to be a doctor. The other doctor, the doctor that we saw walking up to the tank that time, surrendering himself in order to save his hospital, he's still alive. They've been torturing him ever since they arrested him. They've now moved him into solitary confinement. There was an appeal appealing his detainment. So as a response to that appeal, they moved him into solitary confinement. This guy's a doctor. He's not a terrorist. He's never done anything wrong. This is the way Israel treats its prisoners. It's the only country on earth that has a military prison specifically constructed for children. They arrest children as young as 5 years old. They take them to these military prisons. These children are repeatedly raped, they are brutalized, they are tormented, they are tortured, psychologically damaged for the rest of their lives. This is what Israelis love to do. People say if they wanted to genocide Gaza, they could have done it in a day. If, you know, it's taken 3 years, why, you know, they're terrible at genocide. No, it's because they like to string it out. They like to keep these people alive as long as possible, have them living in garbage, having their children eaten by rats at night, having to drink tainted water, having to walk miles to get flour that Israelis drop from helicopters into sandy rubbish pits. So the children have to go to rubbish pits, rubbish dumps, and try to grab fresh flour from amongst the rubbish and sand in the sun. This is how they give them food aid. They like to torment these people as much as they can, keep them alive as long as possible, and milk every single last drop of pain they can from them. That's the Israeli way. And when they take them to jail, they torture them every day. If they complain, sometimes they get raped by dogs. Sometimes they get raped by iron bars. The one doctor they raped with an iron bar, they punctured his bowel, punctured his lung. They inserted it so far. They treat the prisoners in the most brutal manner possible. Just keep them blindfolded and even torture them while they're blindfolded. Nobody should be allowed to treat prisoners this way, and this is what they do. They take absolute pleasure in destruction. Not only do they torture the prisoners this way, they go into the houses of the people and they film themselves smashing up all their beautiful possessions, film themselves destroying churches, film themselves creating destruction and just acting like adolescent vandals. And they take great pride and pleasure in it to show how much they are enjoying destroying all non-Jewish life and destroying anything of pleasantry or beauty.
נהפוך את זה למה שלנו, נכון דוד?
So what they do, these are a subhuman parasitic species. These are not humans. Humans don't do what Israelis do. If any Israelis come into your shops, don't serve them anything. Tell them to fuck off. Any Israelis come into your country as tourists, they've all served in the IDF. They've all gone and done this stuff. So you need to tell them to fuck off, chase them out of your country. Don't have anything to do with these people. And the whole world needs to rally together and go to Palestine and tell these people to fuck off out of Palestine as well. Put them in a boat somewhere. Just I've said put them all on Christmas Island. Give them all Antarctica to live. They can all go and have an air in Antarctica. They can live there. Whatever. These parasitic subhuman demons need to just fuck off and leave the human race alone. And that's the thing, that's the problem, is that everybody is supporting this bullshit because it says in the book that they wrote that everybody needs to support them. You can't see a problem with this, anyone? I mean, come on, folks. It's unbelievable that anybody is still supporting this shit. And any politician, any media personality, any social influencer, anybody at all who is still supporting the state of Israel is a subhuman, degenerate, psychopathic parasite, frankly. There's nothing more that can be said about these people. That's just the way it is. You know, a lot of the world is waking up to it, but people aren't seeing what to do about it. Yeah, and again, the problem really is that people believe in authority. They believe authority is real, even though the people who currently sit in positions of authority have abdicated any privilege they had to govern anybody by their support for the war crimes of Israel. By the fact that they injected everybody with poison during the scandemic. I mean, they injected everybody, all the COVID injections, all the governments that did this, the politicians and the media personalities and the doctors, all the people that pushed it.
Then I realize what it is. There's a man in back of this place. He's the one who's doing it.
All these people are guilty of crimes against humanity. None of them can be trusted. Any of them that are still there, I mean, have abdicated any privilege they have to claim they have any authority on anything. That includes doctors, media personalities, social influencers, politicians, any of these people. And it's the same thing with Israel and Gaza, anybody who's supporting this. I mean, this is crimes against humanity that these people are doing. Why are the people of any nation supporting these people?
When the truth comes out, when the truth comes out, you can run, but you know it's ending. At the bottom of the grave, you're digging out. When the truth comes out, yeah, you know this is just the beginning. Lies crumble down when the truth comes out.
I mean, everyone needs to do what they're doing in Albania and just kick these people out. Apparently, they're going like to temporary structures that Israelis are staying in and throwing them out of these places as well. Yeah, they're just chasing them down and getting them out of the country. And it's good to see stuff like this. They just really don't want them there. Yeah, I don't think that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump are going to get away with buying this island and doing what they want to. And like I showed you before, this is a prime strategic military place, folks. This isn't just some resort they're going to set up. You imagine the type of Epstein operation they could set up on an island that already has those sorts of facilities built into it. All these bunkers and tunnel systems and submarine tunnels and this is just next level shit, you know? Imagine being like a multi-billionaire and just having no problem, just an unlimited supply of money and be able to just say, oh, let's buy this old military island base and revamp it. Yeah, it'll make a wonderful warm fuzzy resort for us. So yeah, that's the plan. I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think that they're going to get away with it. I think the people of Albania are going to get rid of that puppet politician that they've got there. They generally don't fuck around, people from that area, people from the Balkans, Croatians, Albanians, Serbians. These people don't fuck around. They do something that, you do something they don't like, and they generally take the matter in hand. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Just a short report today. Just want to let you know I'm still alive and just touch on what's going on in the world. And get people to see, look, like, it's our respect and authority. I mean, it's a puppet show at this point. It's a puppet show, folks. And it's our respect for their authority, which is the root cause of the entire problem. They do all this shit to keep you distracted. The ballroom, the UFC games, even the wars and the destruction and blah, blah, blah. I mean, sure, Israel's doing what it's going to do, which is terrible and we need to stop it. But they want you to be in a state of like sensory overload at the moment. They're going to let Israel continue its rampage. They want you more focused on what's going on in your own country with the ballroom and the migrant influx and you know, the rapes and the pillaging and the plundering that's coming with the migrant influx and the white genocide that's happening, which is absolutely happening, all done deliberately. All the migrant influx into our countries, all the rape gangs, all this sort of shit that's going on in all Western countries, all being flooded into your countries by the same people. Israeli NGOs brought all the migrants in, continuing to bring boatloads of migrants into Europe, Israeli NGOs smuggling them in. All this is being done by design, folks, to create mayhem and chaos and have everybody in a state where they're saying, well, it's terrible, someone should fix it, but not us, because we've lost the alpha males. We've lost people who are prepared to stand up for themselves. Well, we're seeing people that are prepared to stand up for themselves in Albania. Perhaps we need to see a lot more of that. The United States is one of the most heavily armed countries on earth. Why on earth are the people allowing their government to do what it's doing? Why are they allowing their government to basically give the country away to Israel when it's obvious that Israel is in breach of international law and is carrying out a genocide of both Palestine and now Lebanon and will continue? And by merging with this country, you'll put the United States in the same position where it is now, committing war crimes as if it wasn't already, but even more so. It's basically handing the keys to the nation over to Israel. And there was some theater I saw where now Israel has been named on the number one watch list of countries guilty of international espionage, spying on the United States. Well, that's interesting. We already knew that, and perhaps they're saying this because it means something, or perhaps it's just theater for the masses. You know, the way most of this stuff is theater for the masses, the way there was a phone call the other day, apparently, where Donald Trump was outraged and told Bibi he was fucking crazy and blah, blah, blah. I think this is all just theater for the masses because it's all the one thing, and Bibi's not going to stop, and Trump knows that. Trump's been kind of hung out to dry. I think he knows that. I think he knows that if he doesn't just toe the line, then the Epstein files will be released, and perhaps they have been. I mean, you keep hearing reports of this. Who knows? But even if they are, the media isn't going to touch it. It all comes down to us. It all comes down to our belief that these people still hold the reins of power, even though they've abdicated any privilege they had to do so. This is something I've been saying for years and years and years. It's like I'm just coming on here and repeating myself for the last 20 years on these shows. Stop complying with your own slavery. Stop believing in what these people do. Spread information. Create community within your own community. Get to know the people around you. Get to know the people around you. Stand together to say no to this bullshit and take your country back, especially the people of the United States. You're armed enough to do it, and you don't even need to fire a shot. Just take your weapons with you and say, hey, we're here. We got this, and you guys are leaving because we're going to institute a new government, because it says in this here document, this Declaration of Independence, this Constitution, that we have the right to do so, and we think you're all pretty fucked, so fuck off, get on a boat, off you go, anywhere. Not here, just go, and we're going to institute new government and we're going to set things right. That would be a good starting point. The American people could do it. You got enough weapons, you got enough good people in the United States to actually do this. And I think you got enough people within the United States that would actually want to see it happen, irrespective of what the media said or says. So wouldn't that be great to see that happen? Unfortunately, that's probably the only thing that's going to do it. I mean, what other country can do it? The United States has got all the bombs and all the weapons, so that's where it needs to happen. Plus, like I said, it's the most heavily armed population on Earth. They do have the means and the know-how and the ability, the legal ability and the legal right and even the legal duty, the national duty, to reclaim their government. It's about time they did so. And if they did, that would change the world. Wouldn't that be a good thing to see? Hey, we can always hope, folks, even though hope is a somewhat thin soup. We can hope. It would be great to see it happen. But anyway, I'm going to leave it there for now, folks. Thank you for joining me on this report. It's always a pleasure to have your company. Like I said, short video today, but I just wanted to come and give you a bit of a heads up. My last video, or the video before, got banned on YouTube. I mean, I'm getting censored and banned and, you know, throttled all over the place. That's just the way it goes. But hey, believe in yourself, because we got this. I'm still going to try to get to Europe as well, travel permitting. The supply chain, I mean, nothing's flowing yet. So we're going to start seeing some pretty major price increases soon. So I don't know, we're going to just see what happens. But I'm still hoping to get to Europe. So we'll just see what happens with that. I hope to see you at Liverpool if I can. And thank you to the same thanks, people who send me kind emails, people who send me information as well. Keep sending me information. It's good to get information from other places around the world and see what's going on from people on the ground. So I do appreciate that. Lay off with the Tesla requests for a little while for my nephew. He's a little bit overwhelmed with so many requests at the moment. So we're just going to put that on hold for the moment until I hear back from him. So yeah, that's about that with that for the moment. Thank you, of course, to anybody who's ever made a contribution to the website as well. It's very, very appreciated, folks. I know it's very, very difficult at the moment, and I really, really do appreciate those who do and who can make contributions, and to all those who have in the past. It really is what's kept me on the air. And we are in some incredibly interesting times, folks. It's going to be interesting to see where this year goes. This is going to be an incredibly significant year with some of the changes that are coming. Through this whole supply chain breakup, China's now saying that they're going to move all trade over to BRICS. They're going to trade in Chinese yuan. So it is the end of the petrodollar, as we predicted. This is going to take a little while to manifest. I mean, even if the petrodollar isn't used for oil trade, like straight away, it's not just going to crash overnight. It's going to be a lot of it's going to be media driven as well. But it's going to be a shift away from it. And within a few years, I'd say America is, I mean, it's going to have to default on its debt. So it's just going to be basically broken apart and sold off, because that's the way it goes. And that's going to happen because of the loss of the petrodollar. See, this is what Trump's done. 17 US bases down, the loss of the petrodollar, the Strait of Hormuz is now controlled by Iran, and now they're going to hand all the military over to Israel. He's bled the country dry while he's been in office, like so many kickbacks for himself. 3,700 trade deals he's done. He's made $4.6 billion for himself, given off hundreds of millions of dollars to his family. He's exempted his family from tax audits, past, present, and future forever through executive orders. He is now signing the military over to Israel, basically giving the country away. And then he's just going to go out of office, and he's even saying maybe he'll go to Israel and run for Prime Minister of Israel because he's so popular over there. It's incredible. He's going to be remembered as the great calamity, the Nakba of the United States. What destroyed the United States? I mean, losing the petrodollar. Make himself $4.6 billion profit in the meantime. Tear up the White House lawn, do a ballroom, put a UFC match there, turn it into like the Hunger Games. Want to put a note with his face on it. I mean, it's just insane. It's just insane what this guy's done. Lost all the US military bases and lost the petrodollar, being the two main achievements of his presidency so far. Unbelievable. And we're only like just over a year into it. What else is he going to do? Incredible. Unbelievable. there's still running articles about what happens to Melania Trump if Trump dies in office. So perhaps he's going to bail out. Perhaps they're going to pull the plug on him. Perhaps he's done his job. Who knows where it's going to go? Can't wait to see. But anyway, folks, I'm going to leave it there for now. Thank you for joining on this report. Again, thank you to all the people who send me kind emails. Thank you for the kind words. Thank you to anybody who can make a contribution. I really appreciate it. And I'll look forward to seeing you again soon, folks. Please take very good care until then. In La Cache. Nacha, you want to say goodbye? You want to say goodbye, Nacha? Nacha. Nacha, Nacha. What are you doing? What are you doing? You want to say goodbye? You want to say goodbye? You're just running around wagging your tail, being a little waggy tail girl. All right, let's go inside. See you, folks.
A professor in Atlanta, USA, has just announced an impressive invention. A stove that does not use gasoline, oil, or gas, but only uses water to create fire. This stove operates based on the principle of separating water, H2O, into two components, hydrogen and oxygen. Then the hydrogen gas is burned, creating a powerful source of energy enough to cook or use for many other purposes. What's more special, this invention is not only environmentally friendly, but also has extremely low operating costs. Water, an available and easily renewable resource, can replace the polluting fossil fuels that we are dependent on. The professor hopes that this stove will open a new direction for the use of clean energy in daily life, helping to minimize negative impacts on the environment and bring economic solutions to many families around the world.